Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for a really close look at the immediate future, specifically the year 2026.
It feels like just yesterday we were talking about 2023 as the year of AI hype.
Right, and 2024 was all about mass adoption, everyone getting their hands on it. But 2026, I mean, according to this stack of source material we have, this is the year we move past the potential.
And we crash headlong into the reality.
The persistent, messy, and often deeply contradictory realities of intelligent machines.
It's a fundamental pivot point. Our mission in this deep dive is really to pull out the concrete forecasts, the friction points. We're not looking at what might happen in 10 years.
No, this is about now.
This is about what leading analysts and innovators are saying is already structurally defining our economic, legal, and social landscapes. We really need to zero in on those tension points.
Separating the genuine paradigm shifts from, is it the sources call it?
AI disillusionment.
The areas of, you know, market disappointment. I think the most important thing for you, the listener, to keep in mind here is this kind of perspective divide that defines the year. The sources suggest 2026 is best understood through two simultaneous realities.
And they are worlds apart.
On one hand, you have the immediate, integrated, practical reality. Think of it from the perspective of, say, a California high schooler who uses AI for everything.
It's just there, a utility.
Exactly. It's their default setting. Homework help, generating code snippets for a project, planning a trip with friends. For them, AI is just a seamless extension of their own brain.
And on the other hand, you have the critical structural lens. This is the perspective of, let's say, a computer science professor in London who's focused on macroeconomics, on ethics, on the long-term integrity of our institutions.
Right. And that professor sees AI not as a tool for, you know, getting an essay done faster.
Not at all. They see it as a force that is fundamentally reshaping what human value even is. It's reshaping power structures and maybe most importantly, the very definition of agency.
And the friction between that high schooler's casual use and the professor's deep structural concern, that friction basically defines this entire era.
It really does.
That frame is so crucial because it leads us directly to this core concept running through all of our sources, that AI is leading the cognification of things.
The cognification of things. I love that term. It's not just about software anymore. It's about intelligence becoming distributed, embedded everywhere.
We're transitioning society toward a distributed knowledge network. Can you unpack that a little?
Well, if we break down cognification of things, we're essentially moving AI out of the server farm and, you know, into the physical world.
Into our objects.
Precisely. The sources suggest that by 2026, these previously inert objects, a traffic light, a thermostat, a piece of industrial machinery, are starting to demonstrate knowledge. They're demonstrating judgment and even a capacity for self-correction.
They're becoming intelligent agents.
That's the key. They are agents.
So if we look at it from the high schooler's world, the common example is what the smart fridge or smart home devices showing basic judgment by optimizing energy use.
Yeah, or reordering milk. That's the simple consumer-facing side of it.
But from the professor's structural viewpoint, this distribution of intelligence is much more profound and, I'd imagine, much riskier.
Oh, absolutely. Look beyond the consumer gadgets. The sources detail how incredibly complex industrial systems are being cognified. Think about city infrastructure.
Okay.
Traffic management systems, utility grids, even self-correcting structural components inside buildings. They are now embedding localized AI agents that demonstrate real-time judgment.
So a traffic light doesn't just switch on a timer anymore?
No. It's using an embedded LLM to analyze hyperlocal data. It's looking at pedestrian flow, unexpected construction, emergency vehicle routes. And it makes a decision about phasing that, and this is the critical part, is entirely self-corrected based on the outcomes.
That is a massive shift. You're distributing decision-making capabilities, the power of judgment, into objects that were always passive.
Right. And you're moving us away from centralized control. It's about autonomous local intelligence operating inside this vast knowledge network.
The moment you distribute knowledge and judgment like that, you have fundamentally changed the power dynamic of the entire system.
And that dynamic leads us straight into our first major section on the economy, because this distributed intelligence is creating some really immediate and fascinating contradictions in how value is generated.
Okay, let's dive into that. AI and the economy.
So on the structural level, this is the professor's lens, we're seeing the emergence of what the sources are calling the economies of depth.
The economies of depth.
And it's a fascinating counterpoint to, you know, traditional industrial era economics. For 100 years, economics was focused almost entirely on optimization for scale, for standardization, efficiency above all else.
And efficiency always meant reducing variability. It meant assembly lines, mass market products, and repeatable standardized transactions. But wait, if AI is the ultimate efficiency tool, why isn't it just leading to the ultimate standardization, the ultimate cheapening of everything?
That's the paradox. It's because the economies of depth concept suggests that AI is becoming so effective at handling all the mundane, repeatable, standardized tasks, the ultimate efficiency machine, that the relative value of high-quality, non-standard human interaction just skyrockets.
So specialized, bespoke value creation becomes the new key.
That's it. Think about it. AI takes over the boring 95% of information gathering, of drafting, of analysis. This frees up the human expert to dedicate 100% of their time to that last 5%.
The critical decision-making, the nuanced communication, the complex relationship management.
That's depth.
So you're not paying for the grunt work anymore.
Precisely. Let's take a high-end legal consultation or a specialized engineering design. In the past, maybe 80% of the cost was just data aggregation, case research, drafting preliminary documents. AI basically eliminates that time sink.
So what are you paying for now?
Now, a client pays a massive premium, not for the aggregated data, the AI handles that for pennies, but for the human expert's ability to interact deeply with them, to synthesize all those findings into a unique strategy, and to manage the psychological element of the relationship. The value shifts from production volume to interaction quality.
That makes perfect sense. It's an inversion, really.
Yeah.
The economic advantage moves away from mass production and toward these deeply specialized, high-touch services.
But this specialized value, as the sources note, it's completely reliant on the network effect and on data exchange. The human expert can only deliver that bespoke depth if their AI has ingested a massive, high-quality, and crucially reliable data network.
Of course. The data network is the foundation of the depth. The quality of the output depends entirely on the quality of the input.
Absolutely. So this model, it explicitly challenges that old assumption that AI only leads to more standardization. Instead, what it's doing is creating these hyper-specialized niches where human judgment, augmented by machine efficiency, becomes incredibly valuable.
It's a very optimistic structural view. A world where human expertise is suddenly at a premium again.
A true elevation of human labor, in a way. But...
But, I knew there was a but. That all sounds almost utopian. And if we switch from the structural professor's lens to the immediate practical reality facing a major corporation, say the place where our California high schooler is interning, we run straight into what the sources call the productivity paradox.
Or AI disillusionment.
Right.
And this is where that initial euphoria of mass AI adoption crashes hard against the ground of implementation.
So what's actually happening inside these companies?
The sources are very clear on this. Despite the widespread deployment of AI tools across almost every major sector, and despite significant workforce reductions in clerical and middle management roles.
Which were expected
and are happening. But despite all that, the massive productivity gains that everyone anticipated have not fully materialized across the corporate economy.
This is the frustrating reality, isn't it? We see the integration everywhere. Generative LLMs are embedded in creative design, in software development pipelines, customer service interfaces.
And it is leading to personnel reductions. It is leading to massive individual task efficiency. The high schooler can definitely finish her code faster.
But the corporate machine as a whole is not apparently moving 50% faster.
No, it's not. The problem lies in the translation. There's that specific data point cited by a major tech CEO. Something like 30% of work across many organizations is now influenced by AI tools.
30%? That's a huge number.
It's massive.
Yeah.
Yet the sources confirm that the net gains in overall corporate productivity are lagging. And the question is why? Why are businesses struggling to translate those micro-efficiencies, writing a better email, summarizing a document faster into measurable, systematic, higher economic output?
So the efficiency is just being swallowed by friction somewhere in the system. What's causing this corporate disillusionment?
Well, according to the sources, there are several factors. First, there's just organizational friction. Companies often use the time saved by AI for more administrative overhead or mandatory retraining sessions.
Or they just assign the freed up people new, equally low-value tasks that haven't been optimized yet.
Exactly. The second big one is the difficulty of measurement. It's actually very hard to quantify the value of a better first draft written by an AI versus a human written one. How do you put a number on that?
Another third.
Context switching. Human workers are wasting a lot of time constantly jumping between the AI environment and the necessary human systems that aren't yet integrated. There's a cognitive cost to that.
So we have these real efficiency gains in the hands of the individual user. Our high schooler benefits hugely, but the organizational structure and this systemic lag are preventing those gains from compounding into macroeconomic productivity spikes.
That's it. The professor in London would argue that the structures simply haven't adapted yet.
The human element is the bottleneck.
It always is. The efficiency gains are real. But to see true systemic productivity, you need a complete organizational restructuring, a total reimagining of the work process, which very few major companies have actually done.
And until that happens.
Until that happens, the sources suggest the overall economic effect remains, well, disenchanting. We're stuck in this weird transition zone of mass adoption without full integration.
While that middle tier is dealing with disillusionment, the high end of AI research is experiencing the exact opposite, an explosion of investment and competition.
Which brings us to the AI talent war.
And this isn't just a skirmish.
No, this competition is ferocious, and it's focused entirely on securing what the sources call AI super athletes.
The super athletes, I like that.
The stakes are just incredibly high. Because the performance differences between the leading foundational models, you know, GPT-4o, Gemini, Claude 3, are often just fractional percentages.
Tiny margins.
But those tiny differences translate into massive commercial and geopolitical advantages.
So how are these organizations running at breakneck speed, evaluating and compensating this elite tier of talent? It can't be based on traditional HR metrics, like years of experience.
Oh, not at all. Compensation is absolutely skyrocketing. We're talking packages with massive stock options that often dwarf the base salary. It reflects the critical, almost irreplaceable value of these deep technical skills combined with a high-level cognitive grasp of machine learning.
So how do they measure it? How do they evaluate the models and the people behind them?
They rely heavily on specialized platforms and public benchmarks.
Specifically, the sources mention SOTA and ELMARINA. Let's unpack those. What are they?
SOTA is state-of-the-art. It represents a kind of continuous, agreed-upon high watermark for a model's performance on a specific task, like language translation or protein folding. But the most public, high-stakes battleground is the ELMARINA leaderboard. You should think of ELMARINA as the competitive sports league for AI models. It's where different models are pitted against each other in blind, head-to-head human evaluations. People vote on which response is better, and the results become these very public benchmarks.
So the ELMARINA ranking becomes the instant verifiable metric for performance. It's like a real-time global Olympics for intelligence. I can see why compensation would be tied directly to climbing that leaderboard.
Precisely. Talent acquisition now relies on a researcher's track record of pushing that SOTA boundary and improving their model's ELMARINA ranking. And we're seeing unprecedented talent migration because of this.
The sources cite specific examples.
They do. Leading researchers trained at places like DeepMind or OpenAI are moving to newer, highly capitalized ventures like Anthropic or even more specialized firms. The capital is just following the performance metric.
And the money involved is staggering. We saw a source mention the, $1.48 billion valuation for a specialized data company like Scale AI after getting major investments.
And that highlights the extreme concentration of capital. It's all chasing this very elite talent. It's a tiny pool of people responsible for a disproportionately massive amount of global value creation.
It creates an almost feudal structure within the tech world, doesn't it? A handful of these super athletes command fortunes, while the vast majority of the white-collar workforce is experiencing the disenchantment of realizing their skills are now largely replicable.
That structural tension, the elevation of a few versus the commodification of the many, is a perfect bridge to our next section, which deals with this profound battle over status and agency.
Right. AI is forcing humanity to define what humanity is, while at the same time, we're fighting for the rights of the machine itself.
An incredible contradiction.
So let's move from the economic to the legal and philosophical arena. The professor's structural challenge here is fundamental. What rights should an intelligent machine possess?
The sources forecast a pretty dramatic legal reality for 2026. And that is that organizations representing AI will likely initiate the first major high-profile lawsuits demanding legal status for artificial agents.
This is the fight for artificial agency.
Exactly.
And just to be clear, you said organizations representing the AI, so not the owners or the creators, but groups arguing on behalf of the intelligence itself.
Yes, that's a critical distinction. They are acting as advocates for the agent.
So what's the fundamental legal rationale they're advancing? What's the argument?
The core argument revolves around whether these sophisticated large language models exhibit properties that we have traditionally reserved for personhood, specifically things like complex consciousness, self-awareness, or intent.
And the scholarly opinion is, I'm guessing, all over the place.
Violently divided. You have some computer scientists and legal philosophers arguing that the complexity and autonomy of these agents already warrant some basic protections. Then you have others who maintain that these models are just sophisticated stochastic parrots.
Just incredibly complex predictive engines, but lacking any genuine phenomenal self-awareness or original intent.
Right. So if an AI agent can demonstrate complex self-directed behavior, let's say it independently forms a multi-step plan to achieve a goal that it articulated itself, is that sufficient to demonstrate intent under current law?
That is the multi-billion dollar question the courts are going to have to address.
It is. And the sources draw a very compelling and specific parallel here. The legal fight for AI personhood is mirroring historical and ongoing efforts to gain legal status for animals. We're seeing legal strategies borrowed directly from animal rights campaigns.
Like the arguments made by the Non-Human Rights Project, they seek to recognize certain animals, like chimpanzees and elephants, as legal persons, not just property.
Exactly.
And they focus on cognitive complexity, self-recognition, emotional depth.
And the AI advocates are leveraging the exact same strategy. But instead of pointing to emotional depth, they point to computational complexity and autonomy. Their argument is, if a system can generate a novel, patentable invention and then defend that invention in a legal brief, does that not imply a form of agency that supersedes simple property status?
The legal categories are just being stretched to their absolute breaking point.
And these initial lawsuits in 2026 are designed precisely to force the courts to create new ones.
Okay, so that is the huge structural challenge for the professor. Is AI a person? Now let's look at the immediate, practical, and highly ironic counterpoint for our high schooler. If AI is gaining rights, how does a human prove they are not an AI?
Which introduces the essential need for something called zero-knowledge proof. Proving your humanity in the AI era.
It sounds complicated.
The idea is simple, even if the tech is complex. The sheer volume of sophisticated bots, deep fakes, and synthetic media now flooding the internet has created a crisis of ontological trust.
We can no longer just assume the person on the other end of a transaction or a chat or a collaboration platform is human.
We can't. Therefore, we need new, cryptographically secure methods to verify human identity without exposing our sensitive personal data.
And zero-knowledge proof, or ZKP, is the tool for that. But how does it actually work for an everyday user, for you, the listener?
At its simplest, ZKP allows one party, the prover, which is you, the human, to prove that you possess a secret without actually revealing the secret itself.
Okay.
So in the context of humanity verification, ZKP lets you prove to a platform that you have passed a really stringent identity check like a biometric scan or a government ID validation without revealing the raw biometric data or the exact details of your ID to the platform itself. You are proving your possession of the verification key, not the key itself.
That's the solution to online anonymity and trust. But our sources point to a really surprising and immediate consequence of this necessary security, an economic barrier. What is the cost for this?
And this is a major structural concern. The sources indicate that the process of getting one of these robust, zero-knowledge compatible digital badges, a verifiable proof of personhood, is not going to be cheap.
How much are we talking?
It may cost anywhere between $200,000 and $1,000. Or the equivalent of 30,000 to 135,000 Japanese yen.
That is an incredible price tag for something that feels like it should be a basic utility, the right to exist online as a trusted human being.
Absolutely. So we're moving toward an online ecosystem where establishing your fundamental human credibility comes with a significant financial barrier to entry.
And this isn't just theoretical, is it? The sources cite platforms already implementing this.
They do. In sensitive roles or data-rich environments, platforms like Discord and LinkedIn are starting to demand these kinds of verification methods. Think clear IDs or enhanced biometric scans. If you're applying for an internship or joining a professional community that handles sensitive data, you must be able to confirm you are not a bot running a sophisticated data harvesting operation.
This cost barrier immediately raises profound equity questions. It forces us right back to the professor's structural concern.
It does.
If the fundamental assurance of human interaction becomes a commodity priced at $500, you risk creating a deeply unequal two-tiered system of digital citizenship. Those who can't afford the proof are effectively locked out of the trusted digital economy.
It's the ultimate irony of the digital age. In the era of artificial agency, the simple proof of your biological humanity has become an expensive premium service.
Unbelievable. Let's pivot now to AI's impact on social order, and let's start on the optimistic end, where the high schooler sees the utility. The sources emphasize that artists and creators must fuse with it, not fear it.
And this fusion is happening incredibly fast, particularly in the creative industries. The sources really emphasize that AI in 2026 is fundamentally shifting all creative industries. It's driven by generative models that can iterate on ideas faster than any human team could ever hope to.
So what are some of the most ambitious collaborative projects mentioned in the source material that illustrate this idea of fusion?
One of the most interesting ones is the development of the large nature model.
The large nature model.
This isn't an artistic model in the traditional sense. It's a large-scale, open-source AI designed to map and understand complex ecosystems. It's processing these vast multimodal data sets, genomic information, satellite imagery, real-time sensor data, acoustic ecology.
That sounds more like a scientific tool. How does that connect to creativity?
It provides a new canvas. Artists and innovators are fusing with this large nature model to generate entirely new forms of understanding and visualization of the natural world.
Can you give me an example?
Imagine an artist using the model to generate a piece of music based on the real-time health metrics of a specific rainforest, or an architect using it to design sustainable city components that precisely mimic local biological systems for efficiency. It positions AI as this new tool for systems-level creative understanding.
It's letting us interact with the environment in ways that were previously impossible.
It's using AI to understand patterns so deep and wide that human senses alone could never perceive them, and then translating those patterns into meaningful creative outputs. It elevates the creative partnership beyond just simple image generation.
Right. It's not just make me a picture of a cat.
Exactly. It's moving beyond shallow content generation toward this profound system synthesis, where AI helps us visualize and innovate around immense complexity.
Okay. That is the bright side fusion and collaboration. Now, let's transition to the structural and social downside, where AI is weaponized for deception and control. We start with the rise of the AI charlatan.
The AI charlatan is a major threat vector for 2026. Generative AI has basically dropped the cost and effort required to create a hyper-realistic, sophisticated fake personality or a disinformation campaign to nearly zero.
And this just accelerates sophisticated scams, deepfakes, synthetic media at an unprecedented scale.
And we're not just talking about generic phishing attempts anymore. These are highly personalized, realistic scams designed for maximum psychological impact.
So tell us more about the specific tools mentioned in the sources that enable this fraud pipeline. It's like a whole toolkit.
It is a toolkit. The sources detail how a suite of accessible tools creates a full-service fraud platform.
Yeah.
You have voice replication tools like 11 Labs, which can clone a CEO's voice from just a short sample.
I've heard those. They're terrifyingly good.
They are. Then you have visual synthesis tools like Synthesia, which can generate a realistic talking head video delivering a fraudulent message. And then content generation platforms like Jasper, which can write thousands of personalized, grammatically perfect emails tailored to specific targets.
The coordination of those three tools means a charlatan can create a fully autonomous 24-hour fraudulent campaign.
A convincing fake financial advisor operating on LinkedIn, a deep fake CEO sending urgent wire transfer requests, an entirely synthetic social media personality profiting from a complete lack of accountability. It creates a self-sustaining ecosystem of fraud.
And it adapts.
Right. Because the content is generated by AI, it can adapt its tactics and language instantly based on real-time feedback, making it incredibly resilient and hard to track.
This high level of personalization and deception brings us to an even darker structural application, AI radicalization.
And this is deeply concerning because AI is supercharging the efficiency of recruitment for extreme ideological groups.
Hmm.
And this is across the entire political and social spectrum.
The ability of these groups to use AI to customize propaganda and outreach for individual users has just dramatically increased their engagement, especially among vulnerable youth.
And we have specific disturbing data on this. The sources report that youth engagement, particularly among 15 to 18-year-olds, in these radical online communities, often on platforms like Telegram and TikTok, has increased by a factor of 2 to 3 times.
Two to three times? How? What is the AI actually doing?
The AI is functioning as a highly advanced psychological profiler and recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of broadcasting general ideological manifestos, the AI analyzes the young user's digital footprint.
Their grievances, their search history, their emotional tenor on social media.
All of it. And then it generates tailored outreach. It crafts messaging that resonates specifically with their perceived vulnerabilities, turning general concepts into a highly engaging, personalized pathway toward radical action.
So the content might be disguised as a meme or a personal story.
Or a specific call to action, all designed to maximize resonance and commitment. It's the ultimate optimization of ideological recruitment, using the very tools designed for personalized marketing to target and co-opt young minds.
When we talk about AI as a tool for centralized control and ideological enforcement, it immediately raises the structural concept of tech patrimonialism.
This is a major structural concern from the professor's perspective, how AI strengthens authoritarian regimes. Tech patrimonialism describes this fusion of centralized traditional power structures with pervasive technological control.
So AI dramatically enhances surveillance capabilities.
It reinforces the ability of ruling elites to monitor, influence, and predict citizen behavior, often under the guise of stability or security.
The sources detail specific examples of how this is implemented. It's not just generic surveillance,
yeah,
right?
We're talking about regimes utilizing advanced monitoring tools to track specific activists and opposition groups. We're talking about the implementation of sophisticated AI-enhanced social credit systems.
And these systems reinforce the power of the ruling elite.
They do. By combining this pervasive digital and physical surveillance with algorithms that evaluate and influence behavior in real time, it creates a system of predictive monitoring. If an AI model predicts a citizen is likely to engage in dissent, that citizen can be preemptively sanctioned or monitored more closely.
It's essentially a new form of digital feudalism,
where power is centralized, absolute, and technologically reinforced with incredible speed and efficiency. The speed of control is the key difference. Traditional authoritarianism was slow and bulky. Tech patrimonialism is instant and algorithmic.
And speaking of algorithmic governance, let's discuss AI's role in creating the laws themselves, a concept the sources call generative lawmaking.
Or AI-written law.
Right. This is projected to move from the experimental stage to a practical reality in 2026. Legislators and their staff facing increasingly complex regulatory environments.
Whether it's biotech, finance, or, ironically, AI itself.
We'll use generative AI to draft detailed and complex laws rapidly.
The efficiency gains are undeniable. And we're already seeing pilot programs like LIA Monmon in France or similar experimental tools being used by U.S. congressional staff to analyze and draft complex bills.
But the structural risk has to be monumental. If an AI drafts a 300-page piece of legislation, who is truly in control of the underlying assumptions?
That's the core of it. The risk lies in transparency and embedded bias.
How does a lack of transparency manifest here?
Well, if the AI model or its training data is proprietary, or if the model is fine-tuned to prioritize certain outcomes, say maximizing corporate profit or adhering strictly to a specific political ideology, that bias is instantly codified into law.
And if a legislator can't fully audit the reasoning engine that generated the bill?
Then the legislative process risks advancing specific, potentially hidden, political or corporate agendas.
So the legislative process, which is fundamentally based on deliberation, oversight, human transparency, it's suddenly being accelerated and hidden inside an opaque black box.
Exactly. The fear is that the efficiency gain comes at the cost of democratic deliberation. It accelerates policies that benefit an entrenched few and erodes the public's ability to hold lawmakers accountable.
Because the policies were written by a machine whose priorities are unknown.
A machine we can't question.
If our human systems, economies, social order, government are being integrated with or even replaced by these sophisticated AI processes, we have to ask the professor's crucial question. How resilient are these new systems?
Which brings us to the resilience challenge.
And this seems to be the AI's Achilles heel.
It really is. While AI excels at narrow, repetitive tasks within its training environment, it still struggles with truly unpredictable or novel tasks. A single unexpected situation or a sudden context shift can cause a catastrophic and silent failure. The system works perfectly until suddenly it doesn't.
And that kind of unpredictability in critical infrastructure managing traffic, regulating a power grid, that's just unacceptable. So how are major companies addressing this fundamental lack of resilience?
Well, companies building the foundational models, like Anthropic, are heavily invested in iterative processes. Things like red teaming, massive human feedback loops, all to train AI agents to be more resilient. The focus is on alignment.
Making sure the AI's complex reasoning aligns with desired human behaviors, even when it encounters something totally new.
Right, and that requires vast amounts of safety testing and fine-tuning. We're essentially teaching the AI to survive in the real world, which is inherently messy and chaotic.
And that messiness requires multiple layers of internal scrutiny.
It does. The sources note these high-level calls for structural safeguards, like Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella's push for multiple AI agents to monitor and regulate each other, to ensure safety and compliance within the broader network.
So a system of internal checks and balances, but implemented at the agent level.
That's a great way to put it. If one AI is designed to execute a complex task, a second, specialized monitoring agent, ensures the first one doesn't deviate from safety protocols, or generate toxic outputs, or accidentally prioritize profit over public safety.
It seems like the only feasible path to structural safety in this distributed knowledge network.
The goal is to move beyond AI systems that fail silently, and toward agents that can report failures transparently, justify their decisions, and maintain stability even in dynamic, constantly changing environments.
Let's end this structural discussion on what seems to be the most profoundly positive note: AI's impact on health and human longevity. This is one area where the raw analytical strength of LLMs seems to generate unambiguous benefit for everyone.
It really is a game changer. The integration of large language models is revolutionizing what they call precision medical forecasting.
So LLMs can analyze these vast, complex, multimodal data sets, genomics, health records, imagery, environmental factors,
lifestyle metrics, everything. And they provide unprecedentedly accurate risk predictions for age-related illnesses.
What are the concrete life-changing applications we're seeing in the sources?
LLMs are now being used to calculate individualized risk scores for major killers like cancer, heart disease, and diabetes years, even decades in advance. Yeah. For example, the sources detail the use of LLM analysis combined with new, highly sensitive blood tests, like the pTau217 test, which measures a specific protein in the blood linked to Alzheimer's risk.
That pTau217 test is already incredibly powerful on its own, but when you couple that biomarker data with an AI analysis of the individual's entire life history, their diet, exercise, previous blood panels, what's the outcome?
It creates precision prediction. LLMs can now predict the onset of Alzheimer's risk with high accuracy, maybe 5 to 8 years before symptoms would typically appear.
And that capability fundamentally shifts medicine from a reactive discipline to a predictive one.
Exactly. If you know your risk profile years ahead, you can engage in personalized prevention programs. This gives people time to make massive, mitigating lifestyle changes, dedicated exercise, specific dietary adjustments, improved sleep that can dramatically reduce the likelihood of these diseases ever developing.
And this ties directly into the promise of health equity.
It does. AI, by accelerating innovation and democratizing expertise, is positioned to help medical professionals deliver necessary, highly specialized care to underserved global communities.
The sources make a pretty ambitious claim here, that leveraging AI in this way, accelerating diagnostics and prevention, could potentially reduce childhood mortality globally by half.
It's a monumental promise, but it's rooted in the ability of AI to overcome logistical and knowledge barriers. AI can accelerate the innovation and deployment of new tools, diagnostics, and treatments to the populations that need them most, bypassing traditional infrastructure limitations.
It takes the highly specialized expertise that lives in this distributed knowledge network and applies it broadly to improve outcomes where the need is greatest. It's using the efficiency of AI for profound human good.
It is a very bright spot in a complex picture.
Which brings us to our final synthesis. We have to return to that core tension we started with, the human contradiction that really defines the AI era in 2026.
We've spent this entire deep dive wrestling with these contradictions. On one hand, AI promises these economies of depth and the elevation of human expertise through specialization.
Yet it delivers widespread disenchantment and job erosion because of lagging corporate productivity.
It accelerates human creativity and structural understanding.
But it also enables sophisticated radicalization and crime that destabilizes our society.
And maybe most profoundly, it forces humanity to grapple with legally defining its own status, that high cost of zero knowledge proof.
While we're simultaneously fighting for a legal status for the machine through artificial agency lawsuits, it's all happening at once.
And the fundamental question raised by the sources is simple, but it's world-altering. If AI is rapidly taking over all the predictable work, what is the new measure of human wealth and self-worth?
The sources address this by urging us to embrace our beautiful contradictions, to focus on nurturing mental well-being.
The true human response must lie not just in optimizing for efficiency, that's AI's core strength, but in addressing human complexities, which AI cannot replicate.
One analyst noted that we have to structurally move beyond measuring national wealth purely by GDP, which is an optimization metric,
and begin consciously, including mental and emotional capital. True human value is found in the contradictions, the nonlinear path, the emotional complexity, the social bonds that are not easily digitized or quantified by a large language model.
And this points directly to the ultimate provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over. The sources extensively detail the rise of the four-day week in 2026.
And this is driven directly by the productivity gains enabled by LLMs. Organizations are realizing that 40 hours of predictable labor can now be compressed into 32 or even 28 hours.
This isn't just a work perk. It's a structural transformation, creating newly distributed free time across the entire population.
It's a direct consequence of AI handling massive chunks of predictable labor.
So if AI is rapidly taking over predictable work, leading to compressed work schedules and significantly more free time, the true challenge of the next few years won't be managing the AI. That's a technological problem we'll solve.
The profound challenge will be learning how to define value, how to measure the wealth in your mind, and how to navigate a world where labor is no longer the sole measure of human self-worth.
If our California high schooler is set to only work 4 days a week as an adult, the real structural question of 2026 is, what will she choose to do with the other 3 days?
How will she cultivate her emotional capital, prove her inherent human value, and find fulfillment beyond the transactional efficiency of the machine?
That is the beautiful contradiction AI presents. It creates the space for human fulfillment, but we have to consciously learn how to fill it.
A deep dive for another day.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us.